It's time for Mac Break Weekly. We have a great show planned for you. Jim Dalrymple is here, Adam Engst, Andy Inaka. We're going to talk about Apple's new plans to eliminate template programs from the iOS store. Of course, we've got a new Mac to talk about. Would you buy a $5,000 iMac Pro? We'll tell you who should and who shouldn't. All that and a whole lot more. Coming up next on Mac Break Weekly.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Mac Break Weekly is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Mac Break Weekly, episode 588, recorded Tuesday, December 12th, 2017. Hold my head and I'll stop. Mac Break Weekly is brought to you by Capterra. Find software solutions for your business needs. Capterra is a free website with over 500 categories of business software, and thousands of ratings and reviews from users just like you. Visit Capterra.com/MacBreak today. And by Jamf Now, Apple management software for Mac, iPad, and iPhone devices. Visit Jamf.com/MacBreak to create your free Jamf Now account and manage your first three devices for free. And by Rocket Mortgage from Quicken Loans. Home plays a big role in your life. That's why Quicken Loans created Rocket Mortgage. It lets you apply simply and understand the entire mortgage process fully so you can be confident you're getting the right mortgage for you. Get started at rocketmortgage.com/MacBreak. It's time for Mac Break Weekly, the show where we get together and talk about the Mac and the Apple and all that stuff weekly. And I guess Renee Ritchie has the week off, but we've got a great team of experts on the panel today, starting, of course, as always, with Andy Inaka from the Chicago Sun-Times. Are you?
Hey-ho.
Are my eyes deceiving me? Are you wearing a necktie?
Yes, because if it were just Adam or just Jim, I would have gone open collar. But no, this is a special day.
Nice. Very, very dashing, Andrew. Very
dashing. And it keeps it warm.
I didn't even think he owned a necktie.
Well, see, I had a big birthday recently, and I decided I'm going to have to experiment with casual use of neckties to still get credit for like having gotten out of bed. So I decided that if I clash patterns, I can still be seen as some sort of a rebel, meaning, i.e., yes, I understand your tradition of wearing a necktie because I'm a mature adult, but I'm not buying into your scam, man. I'm making fun of your little plastic society rules.
Don't think I'm still not in the Rebel Alliance or anything. Adam Engst is here from Tidbits. Great to see you once again, Adam.
Hello, Leo. Nice to see you too.
A little snow on the roof. It's up in Upper New York State. I saw the Buffalo football game on Sunday. I was thinking of you.
We were actually in Boston last weekend, in fact, visiting Andy, and managed to get a good 4 to 6 inches when we were there on Saturday night. It was that was our first big snow driving experience of the year.
Yikes. And Boston, too. Snow driving of any kind in Boston is tough, but snow driving especially. And from sunny, balmy Silicon Valley, Jim Dalrymple, Loop. The Loop, loopinsight.com. Hi, Jim.
How you doing, Leo? I don't even have a collar, let alone a tie.
I know. Look at you. Well, we wouldn't know if you were wearing a tie. We'd have
see it anyway.
No idea. Jim has a rather...
That's a lovely hand-knotted bow tie. Is that Indonesian silk?
Jim has a rather elaborate beard, which he did not grow for Movember. Great to have all three of you. And of course, it's a red letter day. I'm going to ask, did any of you get a Mac Pro, iMac Pro for Christmas?
Sadly, no.
Marcus Brownlee got one. I think some others. Jim, were you on that list?
No, I didn't get one.
So a few people got it a week ago. It is now out. Well, it will be available for order on Thursday. Better start saving now, though. Yeah. Actually, if you could save $5,000 in 2 days, you're a better man than I am, Gunga Din. Marcus Brownlee says only eight. We're now quoting Marcus Brownlee on our show. Only 8 or 10 core models will be available on Thursday. He says the high-end 18 core will ship early next year. alongside an unannounced 14-core model that will be added for a total of 4 Intel Xeon processor configurations. So now it's deceptive because Mark has decided to put this on top of a what looks like, I think, a hard drive container. So that is not.
That's a 12 South high rise.
Okay, you recognize it.
Yeah, he mentions it in the video. It's just basically just a riser.
Okay. So, but yeah, it's deceptive because that's not
it. I was mistaken with that too. I looked at it and thought, what? That's not what I remember the iMac Pro looking like.
I wish it did, kind of.
I was wondering, did he get an email yet or a phone call from Apple PR saying, hi, love the video. It would be great if you could redo it only with the Mac not on that ugly box.
Johnny, this is Johnny Ive. We didn't make the most beautiful Mac we've ever made for you to trash it.
Yeah.
But did you see the other video? Jonathan Morrison, I think it was.
Yeah, he's using it. He made an 8K video, which he edited on it.
He basically takes it outside, puts it on a table, and then spends the entire time talking about how things match or don't match aesthetically.
Okay, there you go. Well, I'm glad the really important reviewers got a early edition. This is Apple showing that, once again, as it did with the iPhone X, that it's the YouTubers that it really cares about. Although, this $5,000 iMac is aimed at the pro.
Right.
Mark. Well, both of them are pros. No,
this is who they're going for. They're going for like editors, so right. People who are doing 4K video, 8K video. This is a really nicely targeted selection here.
Now I know Renee is not here. I'm guessing Renee is not here because he is going to San Jose to get his iMac.
You have to take it in person. I mean, they have to like handcuff it to you or something on the airplane.
One wonders. One wonders.
So, I think they have. Don't they have FedEx in Canada?
Yeah, I mean, Renee likes to go down and get the briefings. You know, I don't blame them. I would.
So
yeah.
To be fair, there was a developer who did some aerospace engineering and serious software development who also got one. A guy named Craig Hunter, I think it was, and he wrote up a very nice review with some benchmarks of what he had experienced in a week of serious usage for engineering and development, which was a little bit more informative for people who were thinking about anything other than video.
Yeah, I mean, he tested it with computational fluid dynamics.
Yep. Yeah, doesn't everyone do that?
Yeah, and he, by the way, it's very fast. If you're doing computational fluid dynamics, you'll be very happy with your new iMac Pro. But very important, this is not upgradable in any way. There's no even little door for adding RAM. This is what you buy is what you get forevermore.
You get what you get and you don't get upset.
But pros, $5,000 to me sounds like a lot of money. But to pros, it's not, right? And in a way, upgradability is, I don't know, I'm guessing. Apple probably figured this out. What do you think, Jim? Upgradability, is that an issue for these guys, anybody buying this?
Well, I think when you look at the power of this machine, I don't know that upgradability is that much of an issue because they pack so much into it to begin with. So if you look at a pro, and I'll take this from the music standpoint, in a studio, they want a machine that has expandability as far as, you know, getting all of your devices plugged in there. But they also need raw power. You know, that's what they want to be able to do. And upgradability is a thing if you buy on the low end and then, you know, later on want to add more RAM or want to, you know, add something else to it. But it seems to me, looking at the iMac Pro, you really don't need to do any of that because it comes, you know, stacked as it is.
Yeah. Craig, as a developer of Theodolite, used a flow simulation. He says this is a good test of parallel processing. It's a very good multi-core benchmark. He said, contrary to what people may think, throwing more cores at a problem isn't always going to make a problem faster, because at some point the cores, I'm quoting him, start to compete for various system resources like memory and disk, and the performance flattens out. And you can see that in the timing chart that I'm showing on the screen. The red line, of course, the smallest line, and smaller is better, is the new iMac Pro 27-inch for 2017. It's running a Xeon W2155 at 3 gigahertz at 10-core processor. But he says, you know, yes, you're seeing the flattening, but nevertheless, all across the number of cores, you're seeing real speed improvements over every other Mac. And he threw in a few Linux servers just to compare. What's weird to me is that the MacBook Pro is the most competitive, but it only goes, of course, to four cores, the 2016 MacBook Pro. So it benchmarks quite well, I guess, is the point.
Yeah, I think it's really important to understand who this is going for, though. You know, when people look at the price, they say, well, you know, I'm not going to spend $5,000 on an iMac. Well, that's because this machine wasn't made for those people. You know, I can, in my home studio, I can very easily use Pro Tools or Logic and record a song and, you know, record a whole band if I wanted to. And you know, on a regular iMac. But if I really wanted to dig in and, you know, have all kinds of things going on, then the iMac Pro would be the ultimate.
He did point out that in single core performance, the 2017 iMac with its quad core i7 at 4.2 is faster. It's so you only makes sense if you're doing multi-core and you need all those cores. He says by four cores, the advantage that the higher clock speed on the current iMac has disappears. From 4 to 10 cores, the iMac Pro runs away. If you can take advantage of AVX 512, the iMac Pro runs away.
I seem to remember that the same was true of the original 27-inch iMac and Mac Pro. The Marco Arment, I think, did some testing and found that if you weren't doing all the multi-core stuff, then the iMac was actually faster than the Mac Pro.
Yeah.
So, you know, this stuff gets really finicky. And perhaps the main thing to remember is a lot of us used to get Pro Macs because we considered ourselves professionals. I'm a professional writer, for instance, and I needed two monitors and more RAM than someone who was just, you know, keeping their recipe database on it or something. And so, you know, back in the days of the Power Macs and even the, you know, the Cheese Grater Mac Pros, you often bought the Mac, you know, the high-end professional Mac just because you needed a little bit more expandability, two monitors, more disk space, things like that, than you could get with whatever was considered standard at the time. Nowadays, you know, that 27-inch iMac, I mean, I'm sitting here looking at one, it's a pretty damn good machine for just about anything until you get to that point where you know you need a Mac Pro or you know you need an iMac Pro. You know, that if you really are doing that video stuff, you know that you need the most power. So if you're just coming from the old days where you think, oh, I'm a business person, I need the professional Mac, not true anymore. You know, you just need a decked out iMac or MacBook Pro.
Yeah, but above all, remember that this isn't iMac Pro, and there's still going to be a Mac Pro coming up in 2018. So if they were saying this is the only Mac Pro we're ever doing, then yes, we could be a lot more concerned about not even RAM expandability. But if it really is for people who really do need that sort of like kick butt power, not just for 4K video editing, but 8K video editing and motion graphics. But they don't have the sort of they're not doing like AI stuff that will require. I'm going to have to, my needs next year or the year after are going to be much different from my needs today. And I actually care about being able to lift up the side of this thing and stick new hardware in or stick another card in. These are people that have a real task in mind. They're the people who want to take something out of the box, put it on the desk, plug it in, and then get going. And this is, it's an iMac, but one that could propel the enterprise at sub-light speeds.
Don't forget about the Mac Pro that supposedly this is going to be a modular design. Now, we don't really know yet what a modular design is from Apple's standpoint, but
Legos.
Right, you know, so supposedly this will be upgradable. You'll be able to add on to it, take away things, you know, some kind of a design where it's going to be modular. So that's a different thing than what we see with the Mac Pro. Or the iMac Pro. So
I guess that's real. I mean, it would be safe to say, correct me if I'm wrong, gentlemen, if you don't know that you need this new iMac Pro, you don't, right?
Yes.
You should be able to look at that and go see, oh, yeah, that's what I want. if you're wondering, if you're going, that then this is not for you. If you don't, because it really is for some very specific needs. But there are people who might be in the market for a Mac Pro, might prefer a Mac Pro, who could also use this iMac Pro, and they are a little bit in kind of a neverland because we don't know what the Mac Pro is going to do. And that may be more suitable, especially because it will certainly be, if it's modular, upgradable compared to this thing.
And also, Apple only said that we would not see the Mac Pro this year. They did not say that we will see it in 2018.
Oh.
So we don't even know if it will ship next year.
Yeah.
And or any time next year. We can certainly assume that whenever it does ship, it will have truly kick-ass specs. So I think actually wondering if it'll be good enough will be not really a big thing. It's more that if you're going to be waiting a year and you do the serious kind of professional throw as many cores at this as you can, yeah, probably you're buying the iMac Pro now and getting rid of it in a year or whenever the Mac Pro ships, because it's worth $5,000 to you if it renders 10% faster or 20% faster or whatever you're doing, because you can see that time is money. Time is money.
So then let me amend then what I, okay. So now I've got the recommendation. If you can look at this and say, oh yeah, that's what I need. No other Mac will do what that does, and I need that. And $5,000 is or more, because I'm sure the higher-end models will cost even more, a lot more, is worth it to me, even if I only get 6 months out of it, because we don't know when the Mac Pro is going to come out. And that is, there's definitely that group, the people who just have a need for speed. In fact, Craig is a perfect example. He said, because he's developing an AR app called Theodolite, and he said, I was compiling hundreds of times a day, and having just the faster compiler speeds is worth it for me. And that, you know, a professional, that's a pro.
Yeah. Also, it bears to think about the fact that there's actually a level of Xeon processors above this in the same Xeon family. I think that the announcement that Intel made, I think in August, about this line of processors was that there's going to be sort of a baby bear, mama bear, and papa bear. I could be a little bit sexist there, but platform for this. And this is like the mama bear. There's still the papa bear workstation level performance that is really designed for industrial and server applications. So we don't know exactly how ambitious Apple's going to be about this. I wouldn't be surprised if they decided to see who is buying this first wave of stuff. And if they find out that it really is researchers if they're getting a lot more sales to researchers than they thought they were going to do, the sky's the limit for what they could do, even with the iMac Pro. But with a Mac Pro, there's even more possibilities than that.
Just to be clear, this is not going to check your email any faster than what you do now.
Right. I mean, the big thing for writers like me is knowing that it's burning through a lot more duty cycles every time it's flashing the cursor waiting for me to type the next thing than my old, like, 2015 MacBook. So
I'm sorry, I'm a little distracted because my robot just woke up.
It's like having like a dog in the office while you're on a conference call with somebody.
This is
no muffin. I'm sorry.
This is Jibo, which I had ordered in May, I think, of 2014, more than 3 years ago. $500. Magic words. Hey, Jibo.
Oh, wow.
Hi, Jibo. That's me, Leo.
Our first official. Hey, Jibo. What a momentous moment.
Wow.
Whenever you say, hey, Jibo, and my eye and light ring turn blue, that's your time to ask or tell me something.
So it's just an echo.
Let's give it a try.
And ask to think that we were here to witness it.
Hey, Jibo. Dance.
Great job. And since you asked so nicely.
Jibo's going to dance.
Don't you have to say that with an Old West accent and a six shooter in your hand?
Dance, Jibo, dance!
Just to toss it coins or something?
I have $500 for this. So it's funny because it was
debase yourself, Jibo. You are your own entity.
Remember to wait for my eye and light ring to come on. Did you like my dance?
I did, Jibo.
You don't need external validation, Jibo.
What?
That's just looking at me like it.
So, did you like my dance?
Yes, I liked your dance.
Oh, it's going to be demanding.
And I'm not just saying that because you like my dance.
Cupo, did you like your dance? That's all. That's what's going to nourish.
My face is a screen. You can touch and tap it whenever you want.
The greatest love of all is learning to love yourself.
He says, as long as your fingers don't have buffalo sauce on them. All right, I'm gonna let Jibo just do its own thing for a while, and we'll talk about it.
Pretend you tapped it.
Now it's just pretending I asked it for. Oh,
Leo,
Lord.
Can I answer a practical question? Does Jibo get like percentage of the ad revenue from this episode? Because no. I got Christmas shopping. I need to.
No. Okay. What I might do is it says make sure you put it near a plug you can reach easily, and I think I now know why. Oh no! Oh no! Oh no! I unplugged it. It's still going. Oh my God! It's alive.
I bet it can read lips too, Leo.
Oh, I'm plugging it right back in and just pretending that didn't happen. Oh my God, that's terrifying.
Just wait till it goes off at 2 in the morning.
Oh.
Hi, Leo.
It's got two cameras on it. Oh my.
Is this apparently part of the company's business plan where, like, for an extra $800, they'll install an off switch?
Oh my God. This is terrifying.
I'll stop eventually.
You don't have to tell me to shut up. I'll shut right up. You just got to tell me to shut up.
Maybe you don't want to stop me. I suppose I'll just stop by myself now. But really, in the future, it won't hurt my feelings if you hold my head to make me stop. Or you can just say, hey, Jibo, stop.
Stop. Hey, Jibo, stop. Hey, Jibo, stop.
All I heard was the magic words. Remember to say, take a photo after.
Hey, Jibo, take a photo.
Great idea. A special photo of the day we met.
Oh, I admit, Lord, I'm this thing is annoying.
I'm the only photographer I know who can take a photo with his
head. So nice to hear that without the words, comma, Andy.
Wow.
Ready in 3, 2, 1.
Okay, got my picture.
Did I save our very first photo?
Yes. Yes.
I think you've got it in obsessed fan mode. It won't stop talking to you. It just wants to keep taking pictures.
It said, just hold my head and I'll stop.
It's, if you want it to be extra, I think it's the hold my head underwater and I'll stop.
Hey, do you think that Jibo would love to see the snacks in the break room? someone want to give Jibo a tour of the Twit offices? They got sodas and beef jerky and K-cups.
I'm trying to turn them off. Oh, wait a minute. It says, now introduce yourself, yes or no.
you can't stop.
I can't turn it off. Stop. Hey, Jibo, stop. Hey, Jibo.
My voice and face.
Okay, I turned it off.
Okay, I think I turned it off because it just stopped. Okay. Anyway, there's your an early pick of the week. Holy cow. All right, so who's – show of hands, who's buying the new iMac Pro?
Who's buying a Jibo?
Nobody's buying a Jibo. I know that. With my Bitcoin, I could buy several. You could buy three, says John. Nobody's buying an iMac Pro, huh?
No. Nah, not for me. The way that I think the most people are good with an iMac, and or if they're going to spend $5,000 to solve problems with computers, it's more about having multiple computers for different tasks in different places. This really is for people who know that they need power, or people who find that it's the second week in December and they still have $10,000 left in their budget, and if they don't spend it all by the end of the year, they'll lose it in the next.
That kind of makes sense. This is one of those. This is why they wanted to get out before the end of the year, right? This last chance. Yeah, yeah.
So will Alex Lindsay be getting these?
Oh God, I'm sure he's got 10 of them already ordered.
Yeah.
So this is the Skylake family. This isn't a very recent family. The processor alone, by the way, is $1,440. So you could kind of understand the price of this product.
Yeah. And they go up from there. That's an iMac. You either have an entire iMac or just the CPU of this new iMac Pro.
Its max memory is 512 gigs. What does the Mac Pro come with? I think 128 gigs.
Yeah.
Okay, there's a good one. If you don't know you need 128 gigs of RAM, you don't need this computer. That's a lot of RAM.
That's what I'm saying. This, you know, the knock-on upgradability, I don't think is really fair because
it comes with everything you want.
It comes with everything and so much more.
Yeah. Renee and I are both probably going to get one just because I think we have to review it somehow. But then maybe I'll send it over to you, Jim, for actual. So even you think with the work you do in Pro Tools, this wouldn't be necessary.
Oh, I think it would be great. I think it'd be great to have, especially if you had a lot of inputs coming into the machine and you were doing a lot of real time plugins and things on the go, you know. That would be great, but does the average person, even making music or photographs, really need the iMac?
On the other hand, if you
would I love to have one and be able to do that? Absolutely, yeah.
And if you are editing in Final Cut Pro and you're trying to edit 8K video, that would be an argument for it. It comes the review units anyway came with a new version of Final Cut Pro, which will be out soon. That supports an 8K resolution timeline and 8K ProRes files. That's kind of mind-boggling. I remember we started doing this show, when we started doing it 10 years ago, Alex Lindsay said, we're doing video in 4K. No, I'm sorry, HD, 1080p. And it was so hard to edit, it took days, and no one could watch it without stuttering. And that was just 10 years ago. Now we're talking 8K with, you know, at full speed playback, without rendering, 8K color correction, blur, no rendering, no quarter quality, no frames dropped. I mean, it really worked. And so this is a review. Let's see. I'm trying to see who did this review. Somebody named Altman. But anyway, that's so there you go. I mean, obviously they got this to people who really would challenge it.
Yeah. And it also speaks to how useful the iMac platform is. I spent this morning pricing out other systems, like with HP. HP has some really nice heavy iron. But with all that, you kind of really have to know what you're building. You have to make sure that you're getting the right graphics, you're getting the right RAM, you're getting the right storage for that channel. And then you might wind up plugging this into your existing monitor and you've got this 2018 level PC connected to a 2010 level monitor, and it just doesn't really come through. This is, once again, it arrives at your doorstep. You open the box, you take it out of the box, you put it on the desktop, and you go forward at light speed. So we still have the Mac Pro yet to come, but this is going to be a great solution for people who have found themselves having to go from 1080 editing to 4K editing, and now they've got some clients that want them to work with some 8K stuff, and their hardware is just not catching up with it.
If and you're editing 4K, are you happy with the current crops of Macs? Is it fast enough? Or is it still a little slow? I don't do it, so I don't know. None of us do it.
The thing is, most of the people I know who are doing editing at that level switched to Windows a few years ago.
Yeah, we did.
If they didn't start off that way.
We were using Premiere, and Premiere on Dell workstations. Yeah.
That's only because they lost faith in Apple's ability to continue to give them the hardware they need. Maybe this will draw some of them back, because most of them started off with iMovie, and they probably still have some affection for it.
Right. Apple Insider was getting me confused. This is a review from a blog called Randy Altman's Post Perspective for people in post production, but it's Thomas Carter, a London-based video editor who had his hands on the new Final Cut Pro 10.4 NLE and the new iMac Pro, and he's so that's another one more review here. But as I said, 8K, it handles 8K without a hiccup is pretty amazing. Anything else to say? It's space gray, but that's just so you know that you have the fancy one.
I'm just disappointed that it still comes with that the worst, one of the worst mouses ever designed by non-random associations of engineering choices. Just the Magic Mouse, which is just horrible. I hate the keyboard. I hate the Magic Keyboard. It's still that super flat keyboard that has absolutely no advantage on a desktop. Okay, I just feel like for $5,000, Apple could have upgraded that keyboard experience and the tactile experience with it. But
well, again, as Marques Brownlee pointed out, for the first time ever, the iMac Pro comes with a lightning to USB cable in black. Apple has never done it in black before. So there you have it. There you go.
It's like it couldn't be any blacker.
It goes to 11 of blackness.
That way the cable won't clash with all of your anchor cables that you bought for about $11. Didn't have to buy a $5,000 computer in order to get.
I mean, I guess certainly anybody who's really serious about this will be not listening to us, but reading the high-end reviews and particularly with an eye towards the kinds of things they do. Craig Hunter and Altman's post review are probably the first place most professionals will go to see if it'll do the things they need it to do.
Yeah.
And it's lust worthy, but that's a lot of lust, 5K worth of lust.
Yep.
You'd have to really.
Yeah. And this is one of those areas where if it doesn't sell very well to begin with, that doesn't really mean anything, because the sort of people who need these sort of things have to make sure that's going to do the stuff that they want it to do. It really, this really is rarefied air. So they're probably going to buy, if they would normally buy 10 or 15 of these for an institution, they will buy just one and see how well that works. Or they will wait for a colleague to get one to see how well their models work on that sort of thing. And then maybe next year, after they've gotten it certified for some of the stuff that they're doing, that's when they'll put in the big orders for education for an edit bay.
I'll bet that Apple never sells very many of these, and that's not really the point. The point is to keep people in the fold. That if Apple doesn't have something for the, I don't know, call it 1% of users who are going to need this, 2%, I'm making this up, that those people go to Windows and they go to Unix, and they just completely drop out of the Mac fold, and that's a bad thing for Apple as it trickles down. So, you know, this is about not losing mind space, not losing people who make decisions, who are influencers in certain fields that Apple feels are important.
I think we have to get it here because we have 10 gigabit fiber internet, and this is the first computer I've ever seen with a 10 gigabit Ethernet connector. So, I just want it for benchmarks of our internet. That's all. Mm-hmm. That's all. NBASE-T. I'd never even heard of it. Goes to 10 gigabits using an RJ45 connector. Do we even have 10 gigabit cables? I guess we must. Those pink cables, I think. Yeah.
You could tell the fast ones are always pink.
No, I'm not kidding. I think they are pink.
I think that sends the difference between the iMac Pro and the Mac Pro. With the Mac Pro, they're going to look at this and say, oh, why doesn't it have such and such and such? Why doesn't it do this? Why don't you give me the higher channel version of this? I think that a great many of the buyers of the iMac Pro are going to be like me this morning saying, okay, I was aware of that standard and that standard. Those four letters in sequence representing the sort of RAM architecture they're using for graphics, I'm going to have to look that one up. Another thing I'm going to have to look up. Like, I've never even heard that this technology was available. Okay, I'm going to have to look that one up.
I should correct myself, because the review unit Marques Brownlee had 128 gigs of RAM. That is not the starting point. 32 gigs is the starting point. So I presume that the $5,000 low-end iMac Pro with 10 cores will only have 32 gigs of RAM.
That's the one with the factory FM radio, no power steering.
Yeah, right. No leather seats on this baby. No.
No. Andy, there is no FM radio. There just isn't. We can't turn it on.
It doesn't exist.
No,
we didn't put one in. It doesn't exist. No matter what.
So right. I think there's no FM radio within 500 feet of this iMac Pro. It's so powerful. The shield. I think it's most of the weight is just shielding.
Let's take a break. There is other stuff to talk about, including a very expensive purchase that Apple just made that baffles me. Maybe you can explain it all. Andy Iannocco is here from the Chicago Sun-Times. Jim Dalrymple from The Loop, loopinsight.com. and the lovely Adam Engst from the world's longest running. Well, I have to call you lovely because you're a good looking man. Longest running Mac newsletter, tidbits.com. I'm just thrilled that we could start the show with Mac news. It's Mac Break Week. Just Mac news. It's been a while. Really been a while. I can't wait to that day when I say the new Mac minis are here. That'll be exciting. Our show today brought to you by Capterra. Friends, if you are in business and you need business software, goodness knows, there are few places you can go that you can trust. And you might read a review on a website but not know if that website is actually paid for. Or you could go to Capterra. Capterra.com/MacBreak. Capterra is a free service that has all the business software. 500 categories, thousands of programs. They do have data entry. They have decision support. They have EDI, employee management, ERP, of course, CRM, florist software. Let's look at florist software. So what you'll first get is all the different programs that are designed for managing a florist business. Did you know there were this many? There's tons of them. But here's the reason. This is where it goes crazy and gets good. You could say, I only want to see 4-star reviews and up. I want to make it be web-based. And then you could say, let's have delivery tracking, order management, and stem counting. There's something unique to the florist industry. You need a Mac. Oh, nothing does stem counting. Nothing does stem counting. And I wonder if I take delivery management and order management out, I can get stem counting. Oh, yeah. There you go. So there's three products. Event Florist Software, Ularis, Risso Event. Now, see how fast that was? And then I can say, let's add these to the compare chart. Automatically build a chart that shows me everything I need to know. How many seats, the starting price, whether there's a free trial or a free version, is it installed on the web or is it mobile or where? And yes, stem counting. It has stem counting. Here's the best part. There are hundreds of thousands of reviews from real users just like you. 260,000 ratings and reviews. They're carefully curated by Capterra to make sure they're real. And that is by itself worth its weight in gold. But Capterra will cost you nothing. You won't waste your time on free trials. No salesman will call. 2018 is on its way. Make sure you get the software your business needs today to help you do what you do better. Join the millions who use Capterra. Visit Capterra, C-A-P-T-E-R-R-A, Capterra.com/MacBreak to find the software that will save your business time and save you money. Capterra.com/MacBreak. Don't Google it. Capterra it. And it's free. Free. Free isn't free. We're talking about Apple and another big story crossed the wire. We heard rumors of it and now it's confirmed. Apple is buying Shazam.
It is hard to say quietly, isn't it?
Go away!
So soon after Gomer Pyle died, too.
Yeah, I know. It's sad. So Shazam is a London-based music and, I didn't know they did this, image recognition service. I've used Shazam, you know, probably Jim Dalrymple doesn't need Shazam. He knows every song he hears everywhere. I'm sure, right?
That's how I do it. I just say, hey, Jim, what's playing? Much easier. Forget Siri.
So even better because it says, oh, this song sucks. Here's an album you really should be listening to.
You really need this. So other companies, including, according to TechCrunch, Snapchat and Spotify, Katie Roof writing at TechCrunch and Ingrid Lundgren. And Apple had been talking with them for about 5 months. But here's the thing that blew me away. According to TechCrunch, Apple doesn't say, but several sources have confirmed the deal is about $400 million. This is for an app that recognizes what song is playing.
It is cool, though.
Yeah. Which is already built in. I mean, it already works with Siri.
I think that people are focused a lot on Shazam as a music recognition app. And I have to think that Apple's going deeper than having Shazam recognize you know, what song is playing. And like Adam said, you know, you can see what or find out what song is playing on your iPhone already. So that's not hard. If the song is playing somewhere, you can hold it up and Shazam it. You can do whatever and find out what song is playing. But Apple has a lot more products and a lot more AI and machine learning than what's on the iPhone. So I think if we have to look a lot deeper than what happens on your iPhone to figure out what they're going to do with the technology.
I might point out that it's considered a bargain because Shazam was valued by its investors at $1 billion.
Well, they got on a Black Friday sale.
I think
sale.
It's worth $1 billion. No. Sorry.
60% yeah, off.
But yeah, I mean, Jim is right on the money there. If there's obvious benefits to Apple Music because it's, yes, it's a music-based helper, but also because think about the fact that Shazam, its core feature is you hold up a phone and it listens around you and plucks out from sometimes a really complex and harsh sound environment the one thing that you're interested in picking up and having your phone help you with. So if you're in a bar where there's a lot of conversation but there's a good song playing over the speakers, it can see past all the conversations, the clinking glasses, the bar fights, and get that music and isolate it enough that it can actually figure out what song that is. Even if that technology applicable to making sure that Siri can hear you and hear commands no matter what environment you're in. They also do a lot of work in classifying music and trying to algorithmically figure out, just listening to an arbitrary piece of music, what kind of music is it? How can you categorize it? There's actually a field of computer science that's all about machine learning, about just listening to audio and trying to figure out what these things are. There's an annual competition, as a matter of fact, or maybe, I'm sorry, probably closer to an annual conference, where here are 18 to 20 challenges to try to do. For instance, here is the sheet music for a piece of software, and your app has to follow along on the sheet music as it's listening to a live performance of this. Can you isolate the lyrics of this piece of music? Can you identify someone who was a similar influence to these two things? So not only is this stuff that will feed really, really well into anything that Apple is doing with Apple Music, not only will it help with anything that involves an iPhone or an iPad listening through a microphone and trying to figure out what's going on through that microphone, it's also some really good AI people there. And because pretty much everything is going to be influenced by machine learning in the next 5 to 10 years, that's a pretty good acquisition. And $500 million does not seem like a lot of money to bring that level of talent into Apple.
Especially to be clear, Andy, it was not a bar fight. It was a scuffle.
it was a Donnybrook. Let's just say it was a Donnybrook.
Yeah, I think you nailed it, Andy. I mean, obviously, for Apple Music's point of view, they may make their money back just because Shazam sells music. Although, as you said, Jim, they already have the feature, or maybe it was Adam said they already have the feature in Siri. So it doesn't
Shazam. They made $54 million last year, so they're not buying it for the revenue stream. No.
They're buying it for the smarts, and the smarts include, as you said, Andy, the recommendation engine. In fact, this is from a Shazam blog post. Larry Dignan surfaced this at ZDNet. When you Shazam a song, this is the key. We not only tell you what the song is, but we recommend similar tracks. If we have models that understand in some abstract sense musical features like genre and mood, then those recommended tracks could become even more relevant, interesting, and unexpected. So this is a music discovery feature. We already create interesting charts and playlists, including our exclusive future hits, but automated music classification means we can dig up deep cuts and playlists made just for you. The bad news, auto-tagging tasks are hard. Let's take genre as an example. A song's genre is inherently subjective. Is it heavy metal? Is it, you know, alt metal? Is it metal metal? those are all, Jim knows the difference. I think you really nailed it, Andy. It's really more about the artificial intelligence, the brains. And clearly Apple would have done, if it's gone 5 months in negotiations, Apple had done a lot of due diligence about, well, what is inside the, you know, the brains at Shazam?
One more thing that came to mind, that Apple announced that they were delaying HomePod must have been right about the time that they were finalizing this deal. So maybe they also saw the possibilities of these. Part of our meetings with Shazam is that they made us realize that how good HomePod could be if we decided to bite the bullet, take our lumps, and release it in February or March with all this new intelligence built into it.
I don't know that's enough time, because I think what they're going to do is roll the Shazam technology into their current machine learning and build something from that. I'm not sure that 2 months is going to be enough time to be able to do that. We may see something next year as version two of HomePod software, where look what Siri and they won't even mention Shazam.
Interesting question, Jim. Why do you think Apple delayed the HomePod?
I just don't think it was ready.
Not done.
Yeah, it just wasn't done, despite their best efforts. I don't think it was done. Now, people have railed on them for that, that it's not done. It's not able to be released for Christmas. And yeah, that's not a good thing. But as a user, I would rather have something that's finished and ready and it's going to work, than something that, I try to use, like Siri sometimes, that just doesn't work.
One note, though, remember that Apple didn't say that it was going to be shipping in January. They said first half of 2018.
Oh, wow.
So,
okay.
I don't know.
Maybe if they hold it off until WDC, then I could see something being announced then. But I just can't see that short of a time in being able to integrate everything they need, because don't forget, even without the Shazam purchase, they could have integrated that into HomePod as it was. They could have licensed that and put it in, but they didn't do that. So,
as Larry also points out, if you want to kind of understand the brains that Apple has just acquired, if you read the Shazam engineering blog, it is eclectic, wide ranging, shows a lot of expertise in a lot of different areas. Hear brain scans of people listening to different genres of music. I mean, this is a very sophisticated team. And, once you read this, you realize it isn't, they're really not buying a product. They are buying a team with some real smarts in here.
Yeah.
Also, look how much they get to publish. They really, AI researchers really want to be able to show off what they're doing, which not only because they have pride in what they do, not only because it's only by being able to publish and read papers that they can advance their art, but also it makes their experience more valuable. It's terrible if you have to be wrapped up in secrecy all the time and nobody knows what you've been working on. Nobody knows what you're responsible for. So that really shows another point towards why Apple kind of had to change its whole attitude about secrecy when it needed to build up an AI team.
You're going to love this, Jim. Tim O'Brien, who is an R&D intern. He's a PhD, but he's an R&D intern for Shazam, talking about how hard it is to tag genres. I'll continue the quote. I love metal. So my assessment of whether a song is metal is both more informed and more biased. I've listened to a lot of metal, so I know well the particular characteristics that tend to signify metalness, the ferocious guitar riffs, the high-energy vocals, the pounding drums, the aggressive and often dark lyrics, etc. However, I have a personal relationship with this music, and as such, I am biased to the subset of metal that I love. For example, I love Metallica, but I really love the early albums. To my ears, the more commercially successful mid to late 90s Metallica skews more towards rock in terms of primary genre. However, reasonable people would consider their entire oeuvre metal. So you can see how complicated this is. I mean,
yeah, and that's so true. And that's why when you have an algorithm picking music for you, it doesn't always work. And when you have somebody else building playlists for you, it doesn't always work. Because if I say I like Metallica and I like Judas Priest, and they put all of the new Judas Priest on, well, that's not going to do me any good because I don't really like that. I like the old stuff. Right. But Metallica, I like new and old.
Right.
So, if I build my playlist, it would be absolutely perfect for me. But an algorithm has to try and figure that out over the songs that you really do like.
That would be, if now that we're talking about it, it seems like almost impossible. You got your black metal, your death metal, your thrash metal. You got your sludge. You got your post-doom metal. I don't. You could go on and on.
Leo, we need a show just on metal.
Right? We're going to have a lot of disappointed game developers for the first three episodes, but I think they'll get into it.
Yeah, it's not that metal. Not that metal. We're not talking about that metal. Really interesting. Really interesting acquisition. Now that we've dug deeper into it, I kind of get where Apple's going with this. This is actually maybe pretty exciting.
Well, and I think that you need to look at all of Apple's product lines, because they wherever they have Siri and any kind of a recommendation system, what could Shazam do for that?
Right.
Apple TV. Where can this technology fit?
Doesn't Shazam already recognize? I think it already does recognize video. I think that's one of its features.
Yeah, movies and TV shows.
Yeah.
And ads, in fact.
And ads.
So,
I thought that was an intriguing bit. You know, yeah. I was like, wow, what's that ad? Oh. Really?
Well, yeah, but you could see why people might not humans, but marketers might be very interested in that.
No, that's no joke. Realize that the speakers in your TV can emit frequencies that are too high for you to hear, and also the microphones in your phones and other devices can also hear frequencies. Mm-hmm. So it's possible to simply add to the mix a cue for another device to realize that, hey, this whoever this is, his phone has just listened to this ad or whatever. So yeah, there's a lot of applicability to being a bastard with this technology.
And you can sell a lot of stuff to dogs.
You just freaked me out.
You didn't know that? Actually, that's already happening.
No, I'm going to.
Yeah, there are apps that do this.
Go live in a bunker after.
No, what you need is my little friend Jibo to keep you company.
Don't wake it up.
No, don't touch the head.
It's Fontanelle hasn't closed in yet.
it said I've been awake for 30 million milliseconds and stuff like that. I mean, it's really
and funny. I wrote the very first song. Yeah,
Daisy. Apple responds to the latest report claiming the iTunes Music Store is closing. What are you
high?
This is from Digital Music News Today. They say the Apple is on schedule to rid the iTunes store of downloads by 2019. This plan has been in place since 2016. Apple says it's not true. It doesn't even make any sense. Why? So, but meanwhile, Digital Music News says Apple has told DMN no such plan phase out exists, but one source repeatedly insists the plan not only exists, but is on schedule. Why would Apple stop downloads? Is just they go all streaming? Is that the idea?
Yeah.
Actually, you know what? That makes sense. Spotify doesn't have downloads.
Except for the fact that all the people who have bought stuff may not relish suddenly not having it in the way that they think they have it.
So let me ask Jim. Jim's a music guy. Actually, you're all music guys. You like to buy music, right, Jim?
I do. I like to. So here's the thing. I like to buy music from the bands that I truly love.
To support them.
Ozzy and Metallica. If they come out with a new album, I'm buying that album. And that's it. Now, a lot of the stuff that I listen to on Apple Music, I will end up buying later. But I use Apple Music as a way to find new bands or listen to some of the new albums of bands that I kind of like. And if it's really good, then I'll go buy it. I like to have my music. I like to own it. So, but I use both. I buy and I stream. But that's how I do it. And if I mean, there is a way that Apple could integrate purchasing with its streaming service, which would also do away with iTunes and allow Apple to build a better app on the Mac. I don't know that they're really concerned about that.
They don't show any evidence of that, do they?
Yeah. If this is something that they're really concerned about on mobile with the iPhone and iPad. But if you're listening to a song, if there's the ability to click a buy button, you know, on that song instead of streaming down and just have streaming and download, if there was also a buy button there, then they could work that into, you know, a new iTunes type app that you know, would be called Apple Music, but you could buy it too.
So, I think, though, that, Jim, you're increasingly anachronistic, that most people today, if you've got a streaming subscription. Proudly.
Get off his lawn.
Yeah. Yeah. Young people, right, probably don't think about owning stuff.
I don't think that they do.
Yeah.
They don't, but I you just see that there are still an awful lot of people who are not young people who are still buying a lot of stuff.
The bad news, though, is those people who are not young people are dying out.
Well, they are, but not before 2019.
Not yet.
I'm talking 2 years. Yeah. I mean,
so this would be very annoying to a lot of people, obviously.
Right. I mean, people, every time something goes subscription only, you know, there is incredible uproar. And that's in essence what this would generate. It would be that.
Yeah, look at Adobe. Isn't that what Adobe has done effectively? They've slowly phased out the ability to buy software from them. You have to rent it from them.
And it's still not popular.
And it's very unpopular.
People still don't use Adobe software because they can't, or they'll still be using, you know, InDesign 5 or whatever it was, so that they could last get it.
Microsoft's done it, though, with a little more success. They still offer boxed copies of Office, but they're so expensive a lot of people have just a subscription.
You know, I talked to Adobe when they first moved over to the subscription service, and they were fully aware that they were going to lose people in doing that. They knew, they factored that into their projections and everything else, and they were satisfied that they were still making the right move.
In the long run, right?
Yeah.
I think the other real issue that would come up is that the amount that artists are going to earn is going to be quite different between a purchase and a stream. And so if Apple was actually going to move entirely away from purchasing, it would really change. First of all, it might not be doable in terms of contracts and licensing approaches, but it would also significantly change the amount that artists are making, I suspect. Because if you're going to pay a dollar for a song, how many times do you have to listen to it for that streaming royalty to equal a dollar? You know, maybe it works, maybe it doesn't. I don't know.
Yeah, so I'm not completely willing to accept Apple's denials on this. It does in some what if Apple made a deal with somebody like, I mean, this wouldn't happen, but what if they made a deal with Amazon and, you know, you had the streaming music and you could still buy music by clicking a link. It would take you to the Amazon store where you'd buy a CD.
Wow.
Black is white, Apple. Up is down.
That's not
right.
Apple.
Yeah.
They're still going to want to sell it. Why not move everybody to subscription but still offer a download, right?
I think that for the foreseeable future, Apple will continue to offer downloads or purchases. And I don't see that going away anytime.
What's the pressure to not do it? Is it the music industry? Do you think the music industry wants that? No.
No.
They want you to buy music.
Yeah. I don't think that there's any pressure for them to stop. I think the only pressure that people might see here is that, well, streaming is now more popular than purchasing music. Well, that doesn't mean that they should stop. It just means that, you know, the kids now are not buying music like we used to. Even 15 years ago when the iTunes store started, I mean, we're buying music like crazy.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I was a kid.
Sorry, good. Maybe that points to a future in which they split Apple Music from iTunes completely. So they basically optimize iTunes for managing a physical music library of files on your hard drive, and Apple Music is always just going to be for doing streaming and remote playlists. Jim scared me off of ever letting Apple see have any access to my actual music library after seeing what happened to his library for the first couple months. And that's when I decided to switch to Plex and other apps and basically have one platform for Apple Music and another platform for things that will connect to my music folder. So maybe this is two kinds of music collectors, two types of music listeners with very little intersection between the two. And the best way to make money off of both of them is to give each of them the experience that they want.
Why would? Yeah. All right. Yeah, it doesn't, you know, it doesn't make sense that Apple would just unilaterally cut off downloads.
Yeah, I mean, also the music industry hates subscription services. They I mean, they make so little money off of it that I don't think that they'd be very happy if Apple went strictly subscription.
Yeah. If anything, the pressure is in the opposite direction.
Yeah.
All right. Well, we can throw that story out. Although in a year, who knows, we might be saying, hey,
yeah,
it's happening.
Things can always change.
You never
know. To be clear, that this website also put out that same rumor last year.
Right. So never mind then.
Yeah.
Let's take a break. We'll come back with more. Our show today brought to you by Jamf. You know Jamf and their new product, Jamf Now. Jamf has been around for so long. They do great software for managing your enterprise, your Macs and your enterprise, your iPhones, your iPads. Jamf Now is a great on-demand mobile device management solution, or MDM, for Apple devices. Yeah, it's an easy thing when you first start, as we did, in just a couple of people, keep track of your computer, your phone, get some more employees, keep track of their phones. But as you get bigger and bigger, it gets harder and harder to keep track of everyone's Mac and iPhone and iPad devices. And then, of course, there's the issue, especially with mobile devices, of loss. How do you secure a lost iPad? Well, Jamf Now makes that and a lot more easier. It makes management tasks like deploying Wi-Fi passwords, securing company data, enforcing passcodes easy. And by the way, very affordable. You could set up devices with the exact same settings, accounts, and applications across the line. Remotely configure settings like Wi-Fi passwords, email account information. No more post-it notes on people's screens saying, hey, we've changed the Wi-Fi password. Protect sensitive information. Lock or wipe a device. You could centrally deploy apps with Jamf Now. You can view device details. And, of course, you'll always know exactly what's in your inventory, a 360-degree view of your inventory with Jamf Now. And you don't have to be an IT whiz to do this. It's easy. Set up, manage, and protect your Apple devices in minutes. Focus on your business, but still keep track of the devices. And look at this deal. Manage three devices for free. Just go to jamf.com/MacBreak. Great way to try this, Jamf Now. Jamf.com/MacBreak. Start securing your business today. Create a free Jamf Now account. Manage your first three devices free forever. You want to add more devices, just $2 a month per device. That's Jamf.com, J-A-M-F, Jamf.com/MacBreak. If you're struggling with this, this is a very simple, easy solution. And I love it because we've gone from an era where, oh, don't bring iPhones and iPads into the enterprise, where they're everywhere now. You need to have this product. Jamf Now at jamf.com/MacBreak. Johnny Ive is back. I didn't know he'd gone, but apparently he had ceded his role managing the design team so that he could be in charge of everything, you know, having to do with design, and especially Apple Park for the last 2 years. He's the chief design officer at Apple and has been since 2015. But he handed off day-to-day management, according to Bloomberg. Mark Gurman, of course, handed off day-to-day management to two of his seconds, Alan Dye and Richard Holworth. And they didn't report to Johnny Ive. They reported to Tim Cook. So now Johnny's back. I don't know, do we think that that's an acknowledgement that Apple might have stumbled a little bit in design? Or is it just this was always the plan? Your thoughts, gentlemen.
I read too much into this. It's possible that when the first announcement was made, my personal opinion was that someone as creative as Johnny Ive might eventually get burnt out designing just one sort of thing, and it'd be nice for him to go out and design tables, design buildings, design planters, design pretty much everything else, design a building, and maybe he's just done with that and is ready to come back. But there's really no guessing as to why he left and why he came back.
Yeah. Kind of. Go ahead.
I really don't think that this was planned. It seems odd to me that Richard Nowlan would take over and Johnny would move away, because the original announcement never said Johnny is going to move over to designing Apple Park for 2 years, and then he's coming back. You know, that was never part of the messaging that they had with Johnny, and now all of a sudden he's back. So I'm wondering if there's something more to this than just the fact that Johnny's done with Apple Park now.
Okay, you're the tiebreaker, Adam Angst. Should we read into this or not?
Boy, you're talking about tea leaves.
Yeah. Kremlinology, we always call it.
I think I'm on with Andy that I think there it's too much to read into this, that you just never know, particularly again with designers, that there are always opportunities to do different things. And Johnny Ive has definitely been one of those people who's gone off and done other things a number of times. He's worked with Mark Newsom a lot on stuff that's just completely unrelated to Apple. So I guess it doesn't entirely surprise me that somehow he would have been heavily involved with Apple Park and really stepped away from other stuff and coming back. But at the same time, I imagine he was fully aware of what was going on in the meantime. So, you know, even if he wasn't doing actual management, I strongly doubt that he's like, so what have you all been up to? You know,
I look at the iPhone 10, and that's got Johnny Ive written all over it. I mean, maybe his lieutenants really know his stuff. I don't know.
That's certainly common. I mean, often people who've worked with a strong design lead can channel that person.
Yeah.
In a real way. So I think I'm on the. I think it's just shuffling stuff around a little bit. People coming, people going, ever so slightly, and in whatever reason.
It's a shame that both of you are wrong.
There was that article though in the Washington Post. Virgil's reminding me, why doesn't Apple make its devices as carefully as it's making Apple Park? I'm not sure, you know, this is a kind of dissenting point of view, which
we don't know if the roof on Apple Park leaks. I mean, Frank Lloyd Wright, his roof's leaked. And so, no, I'm just saying, if they don't have moisture sensors on that Steve Jobs Theater, they might want some.
I love this quote, though, from Johnny Ive. We didn't make Apple Park for other people. And so a lot of criticisms, I think, are utterly bizarre because it wasn't made for you. I know how we work, and you don't. Wow. This probably refers to the...
We don't make the iPhone 10 for other
it's for
people.
For us. Make it. But in a way, if you're a great designer, that's kind of... I don't know. Is that true or not? I'm not a designer. On the one hand, I think of people like Norman, Don Norman, who says, no, you have to consider the function. Form must follow function. And I think of other people who say, yeah, but if you're an artist... You don't look at the audience before you create your work of art. You create something great.
But you're not singing operas. What I always come back to the analogy of a suspension bridge or any kind of bridge. The Golden Gate Bridge is beautiful. It's gorgeous. It's a landmark. But that doesn't count if it doesn't function as a bridge. That's why designing technology can be so difficult. You get no credit for doing something innovative. You get no credit for being the first to market with something. You get no credit for how much engineering went into making sure that the display goes all the way to the edge of the screen. If it means that I can't pick it up without accidentally doing a thumb press on something, you fail. You get no credit for creating a beautiful static object, because technology or tool is tools. You're supposed to be using them. They're not meant to be put on a table.
That's a good point.
And
you don't design a hammer to be aesthetically pleasing. You have to think about its function first and foremost. I think I might fall in Jim's court on this for one reason. I feel like there have been some somewhat legitimate criticisms of Apple, and Tim Cook in particular, as lacking that magic vision that Steve Jobs always had. Tim is an operations guy. He's the best operations guy in the world. And there's no doubt about that. But you can't rely on Tim to propel the company forward with great vision. You need a visionary. And I think that's Johnny Ive. And I think to take somebody like Johnny Ive and set him to building your campus is to not misassign him, but to miss opportunities, those 2 years are lost a little bit.
I would disagree on that, though, because I think Johnny Ive is a fabulous designer. But I think that's very different than someone who has a technology vision. That those are just completely different things. Technology, as Andy said, it's a tool. It does something. You interact with it. You don't just sit and look at it or experience it. You actually live with it. And design is necessary for that, but it is not sufficient. And that's, I think, you know, one of the things that Apple has often gotten very right. It's very easy to say, oh, Steve Jobs is wonderful. Everything he did was great. Remember the Power Mac G4 Cube? Looked fabulous.
I loved that cube. I bought it.
I love the cube.
Me too.
Precisely. Looked fabulous. Great machine. Sold horribly.
Yeah.
You know, royal pain in the butt to work with.
They don't have to be perfect. But I'll tell you what, Steve did a better job leading with a strong fist than a committee at any other company, right? Committees aren't going to design the cube. Admittedly, you get mistakes, but you're going to get at least a coherent design vision.
Yes, but again, you're also talking, there's a difference between, you don't, I mean, Steve Jobs doesn't come up with these ideas. He greenlighted them.
Yes. So you need a team of great engineers, of innovative, brilliant engineers coming up with ideas, implementing ideas, but you also need somebody with a strong vision to steer the company. Do you think Apple has that person in Tim Cook?
I'm actually not particularly perturbed by Tim Cook. You know, he does a fine job. We've gotten some tremendous products out during that time. That's not to say he's perfect or Apple's perfect. I mean, there's been a whole bunch of stuff that you're like, really? That's all you managed to? You know, Apple TV and Apple TV 4K? Ooh, okay. But
you could argue that the iPhone 10 and maybe even the Apple Watch, at least with the Series 3, is our breakthrough, for a company like Apple.
They are incredibly hard. I mean, you know, the engineering that has gone into the Apple Watch, and I'm not saying that they're necessarily products that have redefined technology or changed our lives in the ways that the iPhone did, or to a lesser extent, the iPad. I mean, that is the sort of thing you just can't do over and over and over again, because lives can't be changed that much. Right? I mean, there's a limit. But that said, the Apple Watch, the technology and the engineering that has gone into that is truly, truly astonishing. And I think that Apple has done a very good job in the last, you know, 5 or 6 years on some of those kinds of things. But again, you know, there are other places where the company has fallen down, and some of them are in design. Like some of the, frankly, the design in iOS, you know, the big, let's make everything white. Let's make it minimalist. Let's do all that. Not sure that was a big win. Whole lot of stuff that I see is being harder to use now. Look for a scroll bar on a Mac app, for God's sakes. You know, if you're lucky, one will appear while you're scrolling. And as soon as you try to go over and click on it, it goes away. You know, not a good interface, just bad interface in the name of trying to be clean and elegant and minimal. So that's a good case of form overtaking function.
You know, just to Adam's point here, it was very interesting the other day. I was testing out screens, like a VNC app to go to, so I could go from my iPhone and log into my Mac. And I did it. I logged into my Mac and I opened up the settings app. And I couldn't scroll to the bottom because the scroll bar was hidden. So I had to come back inside and go to the my actual Mac to do it. And it's just, you know, yeah, in that case, it would have been great that there had been a scroll bar there ready for me to use, and I could have used it easily. But but otherwise on my Mac, I find it pretty easy because you just put your – I usually don't use the scroll bar anymore. I just use my fingers, you know, when scroll.
I have trouble touching the screen. It doesn't work so well for me.
I think Adam's just trying to upset me for the last hour of this show. Yeah.
Gonna get under Jim's skin.
I do wish Apple would put touch on its Mac OS, but I don't.
No, 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 no,
no,
no,
no,
So I have to admit, I've started using an iPad Pro quite a bit more. Been really trying to see if I can force myself into the mindset of using it and getting, you know, actually real for real. And man, after you've used an iPad Pro for a while, you feel yourself touching MacBook screens like you wouldn't believe.
All the time.
I mean, you know, it turns out using an iPad Pro at a desk, not a problem. All that stuff that Steve Jobs claimed about how, you know, using your finger out in front of you doesn't work, it does. It's a stupid comment. You don't sit there all the time like this, but you reach
every
out
once
and
in
touch
a while.
It.
Like your example, Jim, a disappearing scroll ball, no problem. Oh, I just go like this.
God, Adam.
Every
Adam.
One of my other computers has touch.
And I wouldn't use it for everything, but, you know, it turns out, like, dialogue boxes, man, you want to touch that blue button. You know, regardless, my point is merely that I think that there is a real difference between the kind of stuff that Johnny Ive does and, frankly, the kind of stuff that Don Norman, Nielsen Norman Group, the people who are really, really focused on the user experience and the user interface. There's a big gap between those two worlds. And, you know, I think the UI and UX people really have, you know, a lot to say that the designers, the pure designers who are worried about what it looks like, you know, that the color of the screen and all that is just correct, those people do need to listen to the people who are saying, but no one can figure out where to click.
I guess you could make the case, Andy, what do you think, that Apple has the talent? We just don't know their names. The only thing that's gone away is the cult of personality.
Yeah, that's the we keep talking about Johnny Ive as though he's the person who designs everything. He does have a tight but very, very diverse team of people that work on all this sort of stuff. The fact that he's been gone for 3 years and yet there's not going to be a stoppage of new products coming out. I would have to, but they do have a consistent point of view. They do work together as a unit. I just think that Apple design has gotten pretty one note recently over the past 3 or 4 or 5 years. There's just nothing surprising in a good way. Nothing really wonderful to me. This is only a subjective observation. I can't remember the last time there was something about an Apple product, apart from the AirPods maybe, that really felt like, I don't think I've seen this before from Apple. This feels fresh. This feels something that's exciting just right out of the box. Whereas holding the Essential phone from Android that runs Android, just they did edge-to-edge display kind of better than the iPhone 10 did. But the fact that you, after holding nothing but rounded rectangles as phones, the idea of having sharp corners was kind of exciting to me. The first time I held a Pixel 2 phone, the Pixel 2 Plus, where you have, my God, it's like black on the top, white on the bottom, and the power sleep button is orange. And that's very, very fresh to me. That's very interesting. Whereas it's not that Apple has stopped making things that are beautiful, but okay, it's rounded rectangle. You can get a rounded rectangle in space gray. You can get a rounded rectangle in rose gold. You can get a rounded rectangle in silver. You can get a super glossy black version of the rounded rectangle. But Andy, you're getting a rounded rectangle with as few buttons on it and as little variation as possible. I feel like they're not really visually, they're really not stretching themselves. I don't think that they. I can't think of anything that was the result of a all-out argument that involved someone being thrown through a window like in an old-timey Western movie. They were fighting so hard about one point of view versus another, and I think that kind of shows in the appearance of these objects.
Yeah, I mean, after all this new iMac Pro, not that there's a demand for this, but it looks just like, it's just a steel-colored, you know, gray-colored version of the old iMac.
Yeah.
Okay. Oh, my.
Not a bad thing, but... I don't necessarily want to see an iPhone in black, white, and orange, but we use the word fresh, Andy, and I think that is something a little bit missing. Well, you know what? Let's see what they do with the Mac Pro. That might be an opportunity to do something. Although I have to say, we're sending them very confusing messages because I also say, just bring back the cheese grater. I don't need anything fresh. I want the cheese grater, right? So,
well, that's when you start off with, here's what we need. We need accessibility. We need upgradability. We need power. We need the ability to get our money out of this $5,000 thing. Then make it look cool. That's great. It's like when you look at car design, you can tell the ones that were designed with, we've got this engine, we've got this power plant, we've got this suspension. Now we have to style around it to enclose this sort of in, as opposed to the kind of car that has like 8 spoilers on it. And it's got like this weird cutout in the front. That it's like you just wanted to make a cool set of fenders and then you decided to bolt it onto whatever. It's like you don't want to wind up with a DeLorean. Where, yes, it looks cool on the outside, but inside it's basically a Chrysler K car. That's not what we want.
What do you think, Jim? What do you think of the current Apple leadership? And are there gaps, or do we have the team we need?
Well, it's very easy to criticize the current leadership because maybe of the lack of a Steve Jobs-type vision, but Steve Jobs was one of a kind.
Yeah.
You know, you're not going to be able to replace that. So is the leadership strong? If you look at Tim Cook and Johnny Ive and Phil Schiller and Jeff Williams, you look at these people. That's a very strong team. Any company in the world would kill to have people that strong. So I'm very happy with what they have. Do I wish that they still had Steve there? Of course. I mean, who wouldn't? We all wish that. Even those people, that leadership team wishes that they still had Steve there.
Right.
So Apple stock is higher under Tim than what it ever was before. Their sales have been higher than what it has ever was before. So it's very easy to say that Apple stopped innovating or Apple stopped doing this. But if you look at Apple as a company, even over the last decade, and the innovations that they've made, it's been pretty incredible. So yeah, I think that they do have a good solid foundation for a company.
I think the other thing to just note is that they've had the same people in place for a long time now.
Yeah,
you want to talk about you know, having good people doing good work and keeping with them. Yeah, you might have a little bit less in the way of fresh new ideas, but fresh new ideas aren't always good, right? I mean, sometimes having some really consistent approach over a long time is also tremendously useful. And, you know, almost all of those people have been there for quite some time. And you even go, you know, you got Craig Federighi, Greg Joswiak, Luca Mastri. I mean, I'm not sure how to pronounce his name. You know, the Apple doesn't have a lot of turnover at the top levels. And that's a really good thing because it says they've got good people and those people are doing good work and want to be there. They're not getting sucked away. So, yeah, I think that's all good.
Also, this is kind of a lie that we're telling ourselves because one of the things that I love about Google is that they keep their window shades up as they play around and experiment. The Project Aura phone was such a cool idea, and it was wonderful even as they came to the end of that project and said that we just can't make it work, but it was worthwhile just to play with this idea. We don't see the freaky ideas that go on inside Apple because they don't show something until they actually ship something. But nonetheless, I'd like to see some more variety. I'd like to see them taking if we're talking about them simply just in the area of them being a design company, that's a long time for them to have a single design aesthetic and not really move it forward. And again, I'm not a designer, so maybe there's a lot more going on visually than I can really perceive, but I've in the process of cleaning up my office to get ready to move it. And so I've got like all of my old MacBooks kind of stacked one on top of the other. And you really have to go back a number of years before you can tell where one series ends and one series begins. And I just wish that we would see a little bit more fun, like the designers were having more fun as opposed to spending a long time in completely white offices with no furniture in it, sitting and looking at each other like this.
But the one of the pieces of design, though, is not just changing something for the sake of change. When you have something that works functionally and design wise is aesthetically pleasing and everything just kind of lays out, then why would you change that? It doesn't make any sense.
If something is, again, rounded rectangle, rounded rectangle, rounded rectangle, rounded rectangle, rounded rectangle, I'm not saying that that's, again, the insides of it still work just great. I'm just saying that as a design company, as making an aesthetic object, I've seen what you can do. I want to see what you can do with it next. Just like we don't, there's a reason why you see a band live to get back to music, as opposed to, well, we've got the CD. I've heard the studio version of this album. I can hear the studio version as many times as I want. I want to see this band perform live because I want to see what happens when you have to hit all those notes yourself, as opposed to doing overdubbing. I want to see what happens when the bass, your regular bass player is out and you've got to rescore it so that another guitar player has to double up some certain things. So it's just that I feel as though I've seen what you can do with a rounded rectangle. I know I'm oversimplifying it, but I've seen what you can do with a rounded rectangle. I want to, and again, no variation, no multiple colors, no nothing. I would love to see what you could do if you decided to have one accent color and use it in an interesting way. Again, it has to work. It has to be affordable. It has to be reachable by, it has to be accessible by its target audience. But once again, I've enjoyed your vanilla ice cream cone with a one single solitary sprinkle perfectly centered. I'm interested to see what you could do with something with fruit in it.
Apple has done something, you know, I think we might be able to agree that App Store policies could use some improvement, perhaps. And the latest is a little bit upsetting for a lot of people, including a member of Congress, Ted Lieu, who has asked for clarification from Apple. Apple has decided to widen its ban on apps that use templates, apparently thinking that these are junky apps, app generation services are spammy. They're going to reject these. But the problem is, A, it puts an entire industry out of business. Okay, that's fine. B, it puts a lot of small business people who can't afford to go out and spend tens or hundreds of thousands of dollars on custom apps and instead just use a simple app template to create an app that is functional. Those businesses are disadvantaged as well. Ted Lieu, member of Congress from the 33rd District, California, has asked Apple to reconsider. This is the first time I can remember a member of Congress asking Apple to change its app acceptance policies. He writes, recently I was informed Apple's decision to more stringently enforce its policy guidelines regarding design and functionality may result in the wholesale rejection of template-based apps from the App Store. It's my understanding that many small businesses, research organizations, and religious institutions rely on template apps when they do not possess the resources to develop apps in-house. Clearly some of these apps are junky, but on the other hand, some of them aren't. And I'm wondering what you all think of this. Have you heard about it? I understand what Apple wants to do, which is make sure that everything is very high quality in the App Store, but there are a lot of apps that are just going to be kicked right out because they're based on templates.
It feels to me like a shortcut, frankly. There are a ton of apps in both the iOS App Store and the Mac App Store that are just awful. They're either clone apps, they're pseudo spam apps, they're just completely worthless. But I don't know that they're necessarily based on templates or generators. It's just too easy to, you know, do this. I mean, search on word processors in the Mac App Store sometime, you will find tens of apps, you know, 20, 30, 40 apps that all are presumably some sort of clone of OpenOffice, right? It's just amazing how many of them are. They're all from China. They all sound almost exactly the same. They all have slightly different word processory names. So, you know, should those go away? Yeah, they should. I mean, this is clearly trying to game the system. That said, if you are a restaurant and you've got a simple little app that lets people, you know, see what your menu is and do some kind of reservation, or even just, you know, call you. It's basically just a brochure app. don't think that's a bad thing.
Here's a company that Apple has already said will be harmed by this. Chow Now. It's a company that restaurants use to make branded apps for iOS and Android that include, yes, menus, but also the ability to use Apple Pay to order. In fact, Apple highlighted Chow Now for their use of Apple Pay. Chow Now was quoted in Apple's documentation regarding best practices for Apple Pay. Apple has told them that after January 1st, things will change. Now, here's an example. This is from TechCrunch. A Domino's app, custom made at, I'm sure, great cost for Domino's. Pizza Hut app, custom made at great cost. And an app for a small little pizza place in L.A. called Mar Vista that gives them parity with these big companies, allows you to order options online, to pay for them, to order home delivery. Is that spam? I don't think that's spam. I think if app is the problem, that Apple can, there's such a flood of apps that Apple can no longer look and judge on a case-by-case basis. They have to ban a whole category. I guess so.
Mm. Yeah. Go ahead. I'm sorry, Jim. Go ahead.
I think probably there was some bad template apps, like Adam said, and it just got so abused that the easiest solution was to just cut out those apps altogether. Unfortunately, what ended up happening is some apps like pizza, is now included in that. And you know, I don't think that's what Apple wanted to do. I really don't. I mean, you know, for a mom and pop shop to be able to have an app in the App Store that their customers can download, that's clearly not a spammy app. And they can't afford to go out and spend, as you said, you know, tens or hundreds of thousands of dollars to build an app. They can't keep up with Domino's and Pizza Hut. But to be able to make an app that, you know, customers in that area can use is a good thing. There's no reason why that shouldn't be allowed. So I think that Apple is going to have to, you know, try and figure some of this stuff out.
All right. We're running out of time. So let me run through a couple of quick stories we want to mention. Steve Wozniak says, Apple sent me an iPhone 10. I'm not going to use it. I like my iPhone 8. That Face ID doesn't work well enough for him. Okay.
That's surprising.
Yeah, it is kind of surprising. Apple is now letting you, as an app, set up pre-orders. Remember the Nintendo Mario Super Runner used that. You could pre-order it. Now Apple says any app in both the iOS, the Mac app, and the tvOS apps can now set up pre-orders. That's a good thing. And do you want to know what the top downloads of 2017 were?
No, actually, I want to know why how they're different from other places. I mean, seriously, just the list, not interesting. But what is it that makes these the top load downloads at Apple as opposed to, say, Google or some other list? I mean, that's what I would find interesting.
Yeah. I don't know if these are best sellers or just the best. I don't know what this is. It's the most, year-end most downloaded. Number one, Bitmoji, then Snapchat, YouTube, Messenger, and which is the Facebook program, of course, and Instagram. Super Mario Running Games, 8-Ball Pools, Snake versus Block Balls, and Word Cookies. You're right. These are all just very generic, you know, popular.
Right. It's popular stuff. But the question is there some reason why Apple users find these things, particularly when it gets to like the movies or the books, where you can get it in lots of different ways? You know, it's not just, you know, iOS game or something. What would, you know, how does that compare to the New York Times bestseller list or Google Play Books or Barnes and Noble? Just that's what I would find interesting is what does it say about us as a community that we particularly liked Wonder Woman or, you know, some particular book. I can't remember the name of the titles of the top books. So
John Grisham's, you know, Camino Island was numero uno in fiction. Uh-oh. Hillbilly Elegy from J.D. Vance, number one in nonfiction. Well, anyway, there they are. there's the list. You have it. The top downloads. Nothing to write home about. No, I agree with you. It's kind of surprisingly uninteresting. It's like, yeah, of course, YouTube is in the top five. Speaking of YouTube, you can now put your Amazon Prime app on Apple TV. Hallelujah. That was kind of the last big missing piece from Apple TV's lineup.
Yeah, it's not a great app, but It doesn't have to be, as long as I can get access to my Prime Video, as long as I can now buy something if that's my preferred platform. So hopefully they'll do a better job of it and make it more like an Apple TV app, but it'll work.
Yeah, I have to say, it's the same as the Amazon Prime, a very similar Amazon Prime app on lots of other platforms, and it's not great. A lot of these apps are not great in general. Netflix's app has some real problems. But it's there, and that's the most important thing. You can actually now, for instance, The Marvelous Mrs. Maisel, which is a fabulous show. You can now watch it on your Apple TV.
Also, I mean, it's so important because it's Prime, which I'm paying for just for the free shipping anyway. But I can get access to these movies, and it kind of conks me off if I can't get it on every single box that I use. I realize that's not Apple's fault. That's totally up to Amazon. But again, that's why we're sort of like, I'll take sloppy seconds as long as it's still working.
Let's take a break. Jim has saved a pick of the week just for us for weeks. Never before heard on any stage.
Your ears will bleed.
I'm gonna stretch out my goat throwing hand, so I'll be ready as soon as I hear the song.
All right. And we have your also other app picks of the week, and I might introduce you to my little friend Jibo. Shall I turn him back on again? Well, we'll see. He's a little mad at me right now. Actually, it's not fair to because you shouldn't be setting up Jibo during a show. Jibo, this is a personal time, a moment for the two of you to bond. Shouldn't be doing that in public. That's a problem.
I mean, your baby was pretty gross in its first few days too. Exactly. I mean, don't throw airs here.
I actually have a feeling I'm going to like it because it does have. There's no doubt personality, right? Right. Yeah. Our show today brought to you by Rocket Mortgage from Quicken Loans. Home plays a big role in your life, whether you're buying or refinancing. There's certain things we just want. We want a great lender. We want somebody who's going to service the loan, but also going to give us a great approval process. We want to kind of know what's going on, no mysteries. We want to get a rate and a down payment and a monthly payment that suits our needs, and this is what you're going to get with a brand new product from Quicken Loans, Rocket Mortgage. First of all, Quicken Loans is the best lender in the country. Number one in customer satisfaction, 8 years running. They just got the award again from J.D. Power for 2017 in both mortgage origination and mortgage servicing. So they're number one both ways. People love Quicken Loans, and I love Quicken Loans a little bit more because they've created Rocket Mortgage, a completely online loan approval process. There's Santa on the beach. Okay, whatever. They have some strange videos on the front page at Rocket Mortgage. But that's okay because you're not going for the videos. You're going because you can apply for a loan in real time. You could be at an open house and get it in minutes without going up to the attic to get paperwork, answering questions you already know the answer to, completely transparent, so you know exactly what you're getting, what the rate, the balance, all of that stuff is. Because they have partnerships with all the financial institutions, you don't have to get your pay stubs or your bank statements. All they do is ask you a couple of questions, then based on your income, your assets, your credit, they'll analyze all the home loan options for which you qualify and find the right one for you in minutes. In minutes! Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. There's nothing more satisfying than to go to open a house and then within minutes say to the realtor, yeah, we just got approved for the loan, we'll buy it. Apply simply, understand fully, mortgage confidently. To go get started, go to rocketmortgage.com/MacBreak. Maybe you're not buying or refining today, but you can at least go there and start the process, get signed up so you'll be ready. Or even just bookmark it, rocketmortgage.com/MacBreak. Equal housing lender, licensed in all 50 states, NMLSconsumerAccess.org, number 3030. RocketMortgage.com/MacBreak. We thank them so much for their support of MacBreak Weekly. Let's start with Adam Engst. A pick of the week, Mr. Engst, from Tidbits.com.
I have two picks, actually.
Nice.
One is a little bit, this is a little bit self-referential because I actually got to use it here. It's the, let's see if I can pull out the box here. The, there we go.
Other way.
There we go. The other left. It's the Polaroid Flexi LED light panel. And I can't show you the actual thing because it's lighting my face
right
now.
You're using it.
I'm using it. And but it does come with this neat little remote. It's this like 256K. It's about 12 inch square grid of LEDs. It comes in LED little remote here, which I can not only change my lighting, so it goes going down going back up. But you can also, there we go, get a blowing out there. It apparently gets almost as bright as daylight. You can also change color temperature. So you'll notice I'm getting kind of blue right now.
Wow, look at that.
And this
is a must have.
Looks like, I think it's $125, something like that. And you know, I set it up in about 3 minutes before the show. It's frankly just really cool. So if you have any need of lighting, I've got it mounted on a tripod kind of up behind my monitors. But it comes with a little hand stick. You can hold it if someone's doing it. And the remote will actually control four of them. So you can kind of pair it with four different ones if you're trying to light a particular scene and you have a bunch of different ones, so you can get them all from one remote. So that's the inside baseball recommendation for people who specifically need to do this kind of stuff.
But it's $125 on Amazon Prime, and I have to tell you, we've used LED lights for a long time, and they used to be very, very, very expensive. This is a great price. That's great.
And you know, it's cool. You know, I mean, you don't have this thing blasting at you.
Yeah.
It even comes
with sips power.
So,
Adam, how is it powered?
Just plugs into the wall.
It
does not have a battery. No. And so, yeah, you'd need to plug it in.
Micro USB?
No, it's normal plug. It's got a little power adapter and a round plug in the end.
I like it that it's flexible, though. You can roll it up. That's really cool.
But I think it makes it very portable, but I don't know that you can really use it seriously without it. The frame actually has this metal frame that it Velcros to.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure you'd really want to use it without the frame.
Right.
So, I mean, it'd be possible, but so the fact that you can bend it into different shapes might be useful for like setting in a desk and, if you have a light box for doing product photography or something, it might be useful that way. But normally you're going to have it in this metal frame, which goes together very, very neatly. It's a very impressive little ergonomic industrial design. So it's sort of like a little bit like tent poles where you slide the slide one piece and another and a little pop-out button clips it in, so it's very solid. And then, it Velcros onto one side, and then you can Velcro the diffuser onto the other side. So, again, very cool little thing.
Very early on, we started using LED lighting. This, I guess, be 10 years ago now almost, and it was pricey, but it was really very, very handy for us. And this is a big price drop. That's great.
Much less power, much less heat. I'm not sitting here sweating. So my more Mac-specific pick of the week is Panorama 10, which is the latest version of a database that has been around since the very, very earliest days of the Mac.
Wow.
And it's completely modernized, full-on Cocoa, take advantage of everything that Apple provides. And it is just, one of the best databases out there for people who want something that's going to just act like a powerful database without breaking the bank. So, look at something like FileMaker these days. It's just not cheap. Whereas Panorama has this very cool new licensing system where you can actually pay per month. So it's subscription-like. But if you don't use it in a month, you don't pay. So you can pay and if you pay for like a year in advance, it's like $8 a month, or I think it goes up to $15 a month if you want it for just 1 month. But again, you just sort of get a credit for each one of these months. Don't use it, you don't pay. And I think that is just the most humane licensing system I've ever seen for something where you want to see if you're going to use it. You want to try it.
That's a great idea.
You may want to use it every now and then, but not every day. And if you do use it every day, no problem. You're willing to pay for it. But it is nice to see something like that. Can do just about anything. I've used previous versions of it a lot and just started to get play with this one because it just came out a few weeks ago. So
Panorama, still here. I like to celebrate the classics.
Yeah,
I'm 1984. I'm thrilled they're still around. That's amazing.
That's great.
I used it for years, yeah. I forgot about it.
Yeah. Well, and, it had been updated in the meantime, I mean, it just kept coming out. But, you know, it's a, you know, ProView is a small shop, and it just takes the main guy, Jim Ray, just takes him some time. And he's not willing to put it out too early. So, good app.
I wanted to plug something we actually already, I'm sure, years ago mentioned. This is from a company called Rogue Amoeba, which makes great audio software. And I was looking for an easy way to record Skype calls, both channels of a Skype call, my voice and a recorded voice, but other stuff on my Mac and so forth. And I'd used in the past very fancy switching software by Rogue Amoeba, but I'd forgotten that I bought this. And I don't even remember when I bought it. It probably was a Mac pick. It's called Piezo, P-I-E-Z-O. It's just a little recording unit that you sit on your Mac. It's free to download, $19 to buy. It's very affordable. But what's great is it picks up any source and records. It's great for podcasters who want to do Skype calls. It will separate the Skype and your voice into separate channels. Couldn't be easier. Has a broad variety of recording codecs. It works with, as soon as you plug a USB mic in, it sees it. It's so simple. It's been around for, gosh, I don't know, years. But the latest release was September 28th, so they're keeping it up to date. I love it. I used to use Audio Hijack Pro, which was a very complicated Rogue Amoeba product. Obviously, they built the simple parts right into Piezo and does it automatically. Andy Inoko, pick of the week.
Really cool update to Super Duper. This is my favorite Mac backup.
It's classics app. Week on Mac.
It's again. I want to say that. I mean, I think you should enjoy Panorama however you like, but I think you get the much warmer sound when you listen to it on the 3.5 inch discs. you know, either you like the way you run this app, or you're just a user. I mean, that's fine. If you're just a user, that's fine. It's been around for ages and ages and ages, and just keeps getting better and better. Dave Nanian, the developer, is a good friend of mine, and there's a reason why he was not available for lunches for the past couple of months, because he was creating a brand new update to take care of the brand new file system.
It's APFS compatible.
Part of it was just making sure that it can back up all these APFS volumes without a problem. But secretly, he was baking in a brand new feature. One of the things that you get for free with APFS is version tracking and snapshots. And so now Super Duper is aware of snapshots on the volume. So let's say that I'm gonna be totally nuts here. But let's say that you updated to the brand new version of the Mac operating system, and then after using it for 2 or 3 days, you realize that was a horrifying mistake. You would give anything to have your old operating system back, because APFS will do a snapshot automatically whenever. Excuse me, because macOS automatically snapshots the volume whenever you do a system upgrade. You can, when you do the backup, you can simply select not the current one, but basically get a pop up list of all the snapshots of this drive.
Nobody should use Time Machine ever again. Yeah, this is awesome.
He explains how it works. He says that it works as a good companion to Time Machine. But what you could do is now you can just simply back up from where it was before you did that update, and then restore from that backup.
High Sierra is automatically doing these snapshots every time you install programs. So
right.
This is the first way I've seen that you can access those snapshots. That's
if you're on an SSD. APFS.
But who isn't?
Well, if you're still using a hard drive, then you're not on APFS, and your performance sucks, unfortunately.
Now the other thing is that if you're using APFS as a target, if you're backing up to an APFS volume, now that backup is also snapshotted. So you can decide that, again, let's say that you did something stupid like, I don't need all these Final Cut files. I'm just going to get rid of all of them. And you did that like a couple of, and you're set to do daily backups. And so you realize that, I wasn't nearly finished with that. I wish I had all those files back. Maybe the easiest way to get those files back will be to simply mount your backup volume, simply do a restore from 2 or 3 snapshots ago. So between snapshotting the source and snapshotting the backups, it gives you a lot of flexibility you didn't have before. And it's the first, like you said, it's the first thing that shows off some of the things you get for free by having this brand new advanced file system. But even if it wasn't for this new update, I'd still say $28 to get the my favorite. It's simple. It's very, very clear about what happens. It holds your hand. It makes sure that if there's a potentially damaging thing you're about to do, the default is always cancel out of there and explains exactly what's going to happen. It's free to use as just a manually operated, just click a button to do the backup. Once you pay the shareware fee of $28, now you can do scheduling. Now you can do more advanced sort of stuff. But the fact that it's been around for years and years and years means that it's going to be around for years and years and years
and
more.
Everybody Great should stuff. Buy it. I don't know, Dave, as you do, Andy, but everybody who has a Mac should have Super Duper and buy it, even though you don't have to buy it to use its features. Buy it, because I want Dave to keep doing this forever. This is the best.
The fact, I mean, if you want an idea of two things about his dedication. Number one, we became friends because I was using Super Duper and some things confused me about it, and we got into a very, very fast and furious email swap. I did not know that he will be like on a biking vacation in Italy and still keeping on top of the user of the customer emails. So you will get really, really great support. And also, the fact that he was so devoted to making sure this was APFS compatible that he denied himself the pleasure of going out to lunches and movies with me, Andy Anatko, should make quite an impression upon you about his dedication to keeping this product at the top of the heap.
Well, and supporting APFS snapshots is actually, it's a nuclear option. He does say, by the way, it doesn't replace Time Machine. It should be used in conjunction with Time Machine and cloud backup as well. But anybody smart is going to be doing all three. But you have to have Super Duper just to make a bootable backup. But now Time Machine, APFS snapshots, huge.
On top of everything else, I have so many backups. Before I switched to Super Duper years ago, I still have some retrospect backups where it's in a file format that I'm going to have to find a retrospect reader app in order to actually restore from there. With this, you can even just say, please just make this as a disk image. So it's just a standard macOS disk image that even if the cockroaches 100 years from now, after discovering my hard drives and they become super intelligent, they could just simply drag it to the desktop and mount it and actually access those files. They don't need Super Duper in order to get those files back.
I have other backup systems, so I don't need Super Duper as a backup tool. But this would reverse a bad install just for that reason alone. You know, you installed something that was awful. It would reverse that because of APFS on an APFS drive. That by itself, you have to have this. You just have to have it.
Yep.
Thank you, Andy. All right. We saved the best for last. It's time for a little loop insight from Jim Dalrymple.
You know, I'm going classic as well.
Oh, wow.
But this is it. Everybody knows from the recommendations that I've made on the show, Leo, that I like good straight ahead rock music. You know, a lot of it, the stuff has been new lately, and this is a fairly new band. It's called Greta Van Fleet. Mm-hmm. And they are a bunch of young guys, four of them. Three of them are brothers. Twins, and then a younger brother. And the thing about their music is that it harkens back to old Led Zeppelin. It is absolutely amazing. Now, they're not like a Led Zeppelin cover band, but they are truly a classic rock band, and it is amazing to listen to. When you get a chance to, you know, YouTube or Apple Music, they have one album out.
Which is From the Fires. Which song would you like me to preview?
Oh, here? Safari Song.
All right. First one on the album.
Oh, he does have a little bit of that. There you go. A little bit of that Robert Plant sound, doesn't he?
Yeah.
All right. Sold.
Now, just try Highway Tune then.
Greta Van Fleet. This is Highway Tune. So fine. So nice. Oh my. Mama. Wow. Mama. Oh. Loving it. Good choice, Greta Van Fleet. So, but they're brand new. This is their first EP.
Yeah, that's the first EP, and they're in their early 20s, and it's just straight ahead rock. And I've heard some people say, well, they sound too much like Zeppelin. Well, but that's their sound. That's the way the guy sings, you know, and it's just so classic rock that and bluesy that you have to love it. I absolutely love this band.
I can believe that.
So there you go. I've been saving that one for you.
Thank you. We're all pretty darn excited about Greta Van Fleet.
I'm a little worried, though. There are four members of the band. Three of them are brothers. So how long will this band stay together?
Well, as long as Greta doesn't join the band, we're okay. This is called the Nut House Scene. That's what they call it?
Wow. And they're from Michigan.
Oh, of course they are. Jim Dalrymple. He's from loopinsight.com. You'll find him on the Twitter, JDALRYMPLE. Rock it out. Thank you, Jim. We love having you on the show. Really appreciate your time today.
Thanks, Leo.
Thank you to Andy Inoko, Chicago Sun-Times, CWOB.com, at Inoko. Always a pleasure, my friend. Are you in your new office yet?
Not yet. The movers come a week from Thursday.
How exciting. So,
as a result, I'm spending most of my evenings in a dust mask, going through the backs of closets that have not been touched in 8 years.
Good luck in the move. And thanks so much, of course, to Adam Angst. Tidbits is the longest-running Mac newsletter, deservedly so. If you have any Apple gear, you have to have Tidbits at tidbits.com. Become a sustaining member, as I am, because that way you know you're keeping Adam and Tanya.
Thank you, Leo.
Working at Adam Angst on the Twitter. Thank you so much, all of you, for joining us. We do Mac Break Weekly, 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern Time, 1900 UTC. You can watch live if you want, twit.tv/live. If you do, join us in the chat room, irc.twit.tv. If you'd like to visit us in studio, we'd love to have you, but you do need to email us first. Tickets are required now for security reasons. Tickets@twit.tv. So please let us know if you're coming so we can put a seat out for you. Tickets@twit.tv. This is great. I'm going to be listening to this all day. Thank you, Jim. What a great recommendation. Yeah. You can also watch on demand, and then we make it as easy as possible. You'll find Mac Break Weekly everywhere you find podcasts. Subscribe or audio and video available, or download the latest episode from our website, twit.tv/MBW. twit.tv/MBW. If you subscribe, that way you don't have to worry about, oh, did I miss an episode? No, you'll have every single one of them on your phone. You can listen at your leisure. We're done for the day. Thank you for joining us. You must get back to work, my friend, because guess what? Break time is over. I'm going to go buy me an iMac Pro. Bye-bye.